First off, I was really pleased when Amy, the first time Amy came into Vibug, my first thought was, boy, we are really, really going to be grateful at a later time that Amy has joined us, because Amy is a well-renowned, world-renowned oceanographer at Woods Hole. Like many people, she started with a lot of sight, and over the years, her sight has decreased like a lot of people, and she's a senior scientist, and she has had to do all of the similar work that all of her other peers do, but with less sight. And she's also had to figure out how to do this and make her own methods and make her own basically information, put it all together so that she can understand it with the great knowledge about oceans that she's got. So what she's going to do today, and her title of her presentation is Listening to the Ocean, a Deep Dive into Data Sonification. What that basically means is a lot of your data today, especially on the oceans, is it's all graphical. And for visually impaired people, the best thing for us to do is hear it. So Amy is going to present to us today her deep dive into how she's making the ocean hearable for people with vision impairments.
Oh, thank you, Margaret. That is a very kind introduction. Thank you. I will say I get as much out of coming to these meetings as I hope I contribute. It's a wonderful group. You're all such a wonderful and generous resource. I've learned a lot from all of you. Yeah, and thanks to Frank in absentia for inviting me to tell you a little bit about the research I've been doing on data sonification. I'm going to talk for about 10 minutes, just a little more introduction about myself, how I got here, what data sonification is, and we're going to listen to some of the products that I've been working on with some colleagues on this topic. So just real quick about me. I grew up in Rockport, Massachusetts. I was fully sighted until I was in my early 20s. And I fell in love with the ocean living in Rockport. If any of you have been there, it's a beautiful location with a great access to the ocean. And so I went off to college. I also kind of like physics and math. The things about the ocean that I thought were interesting were not the critters so much as sort of the waves and the rocks and the sort of physical parts of the ocean. So I studied physics in college. Then I went on a program called Sea Semesters, undergraduate program, where I learned there was a thing called physical oceanography. So I could combine my love of the oceans with my training in physics and math. And it was like, wow, perfect. I love this stuff. I'll be a student forever. So I went off, found out I had to go to grad school if I wanted to do physical oceanography. So I did. I went to URI, Graduate School of Oceanography. Was a couple years in, loving it and having a great time and learning a lot. And then I was diagnosed with RP. And I was pretty devastated, as any of you who've been through that experience, I'm sure were as well. I didn't know a single blind person at that time in my life. And I therefore did not know any blind scientists. So I didn't know if it was even possible to be a scientist with a vision impairment. So I just decided I had a great low vision specialist early on, Jerry Friedman, who was very positive and encouraging, made a huge difference in my life at that time. Kept me going with different, magnification and then eventually screen readers and everything as my vision got worse. So over the years, especially after magnification wouldn't really work for graphics anymore, I started looking and I continued to look for alternative methods to access data and graphical information. Tactile graphics is one, and data sonification is another. So, what is data sonification? It's very simple. It's just taking data or numbers and converting them to nonverbal sounds. And so I'll start with a couple super simple examples. The first one is your seatbelt warning sound. That is essentially data sonification. The data are zeros and ones. It's either plugged in or it's not plugged in. Okay, your seatbelt. And when it's a zero or one, and if it's zero, like it's plugged in, there's no sound. But as soon as you unplug it and you're sitting in the seat, you undo your seatbelt, it's a one value. That's how digital information works. That works. So that's a simple example of data sonification. But another one, more sophisticated one that you may have heard the sounds from is the Geiger counter, right, which measures radiation. And the output is radiation units, which I can't remember at the moment. But anyway, as the device is brought near a radioactive source, right, the sound, the clicks get faster, the pitch gets higher. You may also have heard someone using a metal detector on a beach, right? They're trying to find coins or watches or lost things in the sand. And that's also data sonification. It's taking a signal of the presence of metal, right, and turning it into a sound. So those are some simple everyday examples. So this is something I've been definitely interested in for my own research. You know, I produce a lot of data and I want to be able to see it, so to speak, on a graph the way I used to. And so I've been exploring data sonification for a little bit of while, a few years. One thing for my own research, but second, I also recognize it could be a very engaging modality or way of sensing for everyone who has a vision impairment, blind and low vision students, as well as blind and low vision adults who are going to interact with data in some way. And one place that many people do interact with digital information or numerical quantitative information is at a museum or a science center. So as a side project, basically. It doesn't really have anything to do per se with investigating ocean currents, which is my specialty. I've been working on a project to bring data sonification of ocean data to museums, science centers, aquariums. You know, they're called informal learning environments or ILEs. So as interested as I was in getting data sonification going for my own research, I was also interested in exploring it for engaging people in these informal learning environments. And even sighted people, it's been shown, will benefit from experiencing quantitative information with more than just their eyes. It's just another way that the brain takes in information. And for some people, sound makes sense to them more than trying to interpret a graph. You know, a lot of people, you know, don't think they can or have difficulty reading graphs. And so their data sonification could be a great way to engage them in with data and information. So to make a long story short, I ended up assembling a team to do a research project with me. The team includes a sound designer who actually is an expert in creating these data sonifications, a learning sciences specialist from Georgia Tech, and a woman who's a professional science communicator who has her own business. And the four of us and me, we went to the National Science Foundation and applied for a grant to develop a pilot project to take ocean data and turn it into sound. And so we were awarded the grant, which was awesome. It's a 2-year pilot study. And over the past couple of years, we've developed about 6 prototypes. And some of you may remember that I actually passed around a link to a survey early in our study to test which sounds you liked better for certain phenomena. And I will tell you now, I will ping on y'all again soon because we're doing our summative survey where we're going to provide a lot of what you'll probably hear today. So this is a preview, and we're going to get feedback from blind folks, sighted folks, you know, young, old, science background, no science background, you know, to see how well our products are working. So we've made about 6 of these prototypes, I think I said, and we call them auditory displays. And what an auditory display is, you think of a visual display, is like the graph plus the caption, maybe, right? So an auditory display is the data sonification, the actual conversion of the numbers to sound, and a narration that sort of sets the context and helps provide basic information about the data sonification that you're about to hear. And that includes what we call an audio key. Any of you who at any time in your life did see graphs, you'd know there was a visual key, like the red line is for temperature, the blue line is for humidity. You know, that's a key, right? Tells you how to interpret the graph. Well, we also make audio keys. If you hear this sound, it means this. If you hear that sound, you're listening to temperature. So we do that as well. And that's all part of this audio display. The data sets we've been using were already available. These are not data sets I collected. They are about a variety of topics in the ocean. You'll learn all about it in a minute. And they were all collected as part of the National Science Foundation has a giant ocean project called the Ocean Observatories Initiative, at where sensors have been put out in the oceans at a few locations, and they will be maintained there for more than 30 years to look at long-term trends in ocean properties and health. So we used a few data sets from that giant project just as samples. So this first one, it's going to be about 6 or 7 minutes long, and it's pretty self-explanatory because there's a narration at the beginning. I have two more that are about the same length, 6, 7, 8 minutes each one, but we can also discuss in between. I'd love to get your feedback, you know, love it, hate it, don't like the sounds, it was too fast, too slow, too subtle, too loud. So this first one is about underwater volcanoes.
Water has weight. Did you know that scientists measure the weight of water at the seafloor to learn about ocean tides and underwater volcanoes? Let's explore with our ears. With a pressure sensor at the bottom of the ocean, scientists can measure how much weight is pushing down on the seafloor. That pressure indicates how much water is above the sensor. The ocean's surface rises and falls every day as a result of the daily tidal cycle. These tidal fluctuations can be measured with a bottom pressure sensor. For example, as we approach high tide, the ocean's surface rises. More water means there is more weight pressing on the seafloor. When we convert the bottom pressure data to sound, more weight will have a lower pitch that sounds like this. As we approach low tide, water levels fall, and now there is less water pressing on the seafloor. Less weight from a low tide will sound like this. Scientists place bottom pressure sensors on the seafloor to measure tides and other ocean phenomena. The data you are about to hear was collected from a bottom pressure sensor in the eastern North Pacific Ocean. In this example, the change in sea surface height from low to high tide is around 2 meters or 6 feet. This area of the ocean is known for large tides. Off the coast of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, for example, the change in tides is less than 1 meter. Let's listen to the tide rise and fall as measured by a bottom pressure sensor over the course of a single day. Did you notice that there were two high and two low tides over the course of one day? And that one high tide was higher than the other? This is common in many ocean regions. Now that we heard a tidal cycle over one day, let's listen to a longer period of time. The next data sonification sounds 1 week of the daily tidal cycle using bottom pressure sensor data. See if you can pick out the daily pattern of two high and two low tides. We are very familiar with volcanic eruptions on land, but actually most of the Earth's volcanic activity happens underwater, at the bottom of the ocean. One very active underwater volcano is the Axial Seamount Volcano, located in the North Pacific Ocean, more than 300 miles off the coast of Washington State. In this sonification, we will explore this volcano's eruption in 2015. Underwater volcanic eruptions can be measured with the same bottom pressure sensors used to measure the tides. Like volcanoes on land, magma builds up over time in a chamber under the seafloor. As magma builds up, this chamber inflates like an expanding balloon pushing up the seafloor. When an eruption occurs, magma explodes from the volcano into the ocean and the magma chamber deflates, causing the seafloor to drop. The bottom pressure sensor measures this sudden drop in the seafloor. In the following data sonification, you will hear 2 weeks of bottom pressure data and an underwater volcanic eruption event. Listen for the sudden drop in the seafloor amidst the daily tidal cycle. In the last sonification, we heard both the tidal cycle and an underwater volcanic eruption event as measured by a bottom pressure sensor. The seafloor dropped about 2 meters or 6 feet over the course of a few hours in that eruption. Let's listen again to that eruption. This time, we have added a marker to indicate when the eruption occurs. The underwater volcanic eruption event will sound like this. Next is a data sonification of the 2015 axial seamount eruption using 2 weeks of bottom pressure data. In the ocean environment, there are always many things happening at the same time. The daily tidal cycle and a volcanic eruption are two phenomena that have been captured using the same data sensor. Let's hear the eruption one more time, and instead of 2 weeks of data, the sonification will include 35 days of bottom pressure data. Listen how the tidal cycle sounds different after the eruption. The sounds of the tidal cycle are lower in pitch after the eruption because of the sudden drop in the seafloor. It will take years to decades for the magma chamber to inflate again and raise the seafloor back up. The sonification will play back twice as fast. The eruption event is included in the sonification.
That's the end of that particular auditory display. Any first impressions?
I like the representation of the kinds of sounds. The one thing that I was wondering, though, is why at the beginning and at the end of each clip, there was a boom, boom, and then a boom, boom. Is that anything except a signal that the clip was starting?
No, it isn't. That's exactly what it is. And this was something we discovered we actually needed. In a later clip and another display, I'm going to play one where the values of the data at the beginning of the clip are zero. So there's no sound. And some of the other clips, the values of the data are zero at the end. And then so we worried that listeners would be sitting there going, is it over? Because there's actually no sound, even though the clip is still playing.
You might want to, in the key, just make it clear that beginning and end sound is a marker.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It took me a little while to kind of think about what was happening, and I came to the conclusion that it was, but everybody might not.
Yeah, very good point. Thank you.
I'm just sort of curious, because in the especially in the waves, or the, how much water is above the pressure, you sort of went what I would have gone the other way, where more water would have been the higher sound.
Yeah.
why did you do it that way? I'm just sort of curious.
Oh, gosh. We debated that back and forth and back and forth. Like, is high tide a high pitch?
Yeah.
You know, or and low tide, or is the high pressure, you know, which is kind of heavier? Is that, should that be the low pitch, you know, because it's heavier like an elephant, you know? In the end, I don't know, we just flipped a coin.
it's kind of those things, because I sort of visualized that, you know, yeah, a wave is, you know, it's higher as, you know, as the wave's up, you're going up a high, you know, the yeah, higher on the y-axis, basically.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of it that way, but I didn't know if it messed up your, you know, the idea with the volcano side of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, it does. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's the opposite.
When the
seafloor drops, the height of the water is greater.
Right.
A high tide, but the sound is lower. So, exactly why
you did it that way.
Yeah, yeah, why we did it that way. Because we felt the seafloor dropping, we should represent with a low sound.
Lower,
like,
right.
Boom. Like, yeah.
What I would like to see added for some of it is a softer voice giving us some numbers.
Okay,
Say the top, the middle, or maybe say three or four numbers, so we have an idea. So for me, I'm looking at it in my brain and picturing it as how it would be drawn on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I don't have any numbers that I can fill in there in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. It was mentioned quickly, but you'll see in the next clip that at least for the x-axis, which is usually time in most of our examples, we do add the time ticks as a voice.
I'm more concerned about
the there values. Was one statement in there that said the range was about
but
6 feet or so.
I can't figure out, say, when you go from the very top and then you have the volcano hitting.
Yeah.
I can't figure where you are on that y-axis.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And that would really help me if you used just a click type sound, and you can say, okay, a click means every, you know, maybe it's 30 minutes or 30 seconds, whatever it is per graph.
The next display has exactly that for time. So it's a good one.
I love that on, I think it was on the first one with the waves, that you could tell from the sound that it was like, I guess, a low tide, but the next one was a, you know, slightly higher low tide. You know, you could actually feel or tell that there was almost like pairs, a low one and a higher one, a lower than a higher one kind of deal, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, that happens in New England as well. We have two high tides a day as well, and one is higher than the other, and two low tides, and one is lower than the other.
Physically, what are these sensors? How do you stick them in the ocean? If one of these sensors is sitting right on top of a volcano, doesn't it get destroyed? So what physically are these, and like how close was this sensor to the volcano?
The sensor's not right on top. It's on the flank of the volcano, and it's sitting on the bottom. So it's well away from the explosive part of the crater, because this magma chamber that's expanding and contracting like a balloon, you know, it's the sides of the volcano that are sort of expanding and contracting. And that's where sensor is, not so much on the top. I think this one is part of a cabled array, which means it's way out far from shore, but they have strung a very long cable along the seafloor to collect the data in real time from multiple sensors along the cable. It's pretty phenomenal engineering feat.
About how deep down is it?
Probably around 2,000 meters.
You know, it was interesting when they were talking about the high and low tide sounds. It's interesting the difference in how, John, you were visualizing the height of the waves, and I was visualizing the sensor having more water covering it and greater pressure on the sensor. So we had different mental pictures of what was happening, which I think is an interesting feature of sonic data, and, you know, sort of making sure people you know, it can come across so differently depending on
they're on the same page,
depending on their experience, and also whether they have ever seen a graph before or not would make a difference, I would think. Yeah, although there are other ways to experience a graphical curve tactilely, you know. But this one is about a totally different topic. This is about gas exchange across the sea surface, carbon dioxide specifically, which, as you may know, is a important greenhouse gas.
Do you recognize that sound? That's the sound of carbon dioxide leaving a bottle of soda. Carbon dioxide also goes in and out of the ocean. Let's explore with our ears. Carbon dioxide is an important gas on Earth. Plants need carbon dioxide to grow. Its presence in our atmosphere also helps make our planet habitable, trapping heat from the sun and keeping our planet much warmer than outer space. The increase in carbon dioxide due to fossil fuel burning, however, has made far too much of a good thing. The increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is trapping too much heat and is causing global warming. Much of the excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is being absorbed by the ocean. Scientists are trying to understand what controls the natural exchange of carbon dioxide between the ocean and the atmosphere so we can better understand these human-caused changes. When carbon dioxide is released from the ocean into the atmosphere, that is called outgassing. When carbon dioxide goes from the atmosphere into the ocean, that is called absorption. One of the most important factors that controls the exchange of carbon dioxide between the ocean and atmosphere is the temperature of the seawater. Cold water can absorb much more carbon dioxide than warm water. When water warms up during the summer, carbon dioxide is released from the ocean into the atmosphere. As water cools down during the winter, it is able to absorb more carbon dioxide. Let's listen to some data. As you listen, outgassing will sound like this. The more gas that is released into the air, the more the sound will become louder and brighter like this. Now, let's listen to outgassing over the course of 1 year at the OOI Coastal Pioneer Array off the coast of New England in the North Atlantic. Listen to when outgassing occurs. More carbon dioxide is released from the ocean during the summer months when the water is warmer.
Winter. Spring. Summer. Fall.
What about when the ocean absorbs carbon dioxide? As you listen, absorption of carbon dioxide will sound like this. The more carbon dioxide that is absorbed into the ocean, the louder the sound will become, like this. In this soundtrack, we will hear absorption over the course of 1 year. Listen to how absorption changes throughout the year.
Winter. Spring. Summer.
Kabina Bani has joined the meeting.
Fall.
Did you notice how much more carbon dioxide is absorbed from the ocean during the winter months when the water is colder? Now that you've heard outgassing and absorption processes separately, let's listen to them together. During the soundtrack, the sounds of outgassing will occur on the left channel, and the sounds of absorption will occur on the right channel.
Winter. Spring. Summer. Fall.
When we hear it all together, the ocean almost sounds like it is breathing. Breath in during the cold winter, breath out during the hot summer. Absorbing carbon dioxide when it's cold and then releasing or outgassing when it is warm. What about other parts of the ocean? Are the patterns of outgassing and absorption similar or different? Let's head down to the South Atlantic and listen to data from the middle of the Argentine Basin, far off the coast of Argentina, where the ocean surface waters are much colder. Again, the sound of outgassing will occur on the left side, and the sound of absorption will occur on the right side.
Summer. Fall. Winter.
They would consider you left the meeting.
Spring.
Did you notice that there was actually no outgassing in this soundtrack? Carbon dioxide was absorbed by the ocean during the entire year. This is because the ocean water temperature is much colder at this location, and so the ocean absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere year-round.
So that did have some of the features that I think Margaret mentioned. It had the monthly tick or click marks, and then a voiceover to indicate the change in the season. And then there was also an example of, even though the clicks were still going for the months, there was no data. And so that little doot, doot, you know, at least tells the listener when it's all over.
I love the fact, Amy, that you could hear the two sounds in the two channels. I actually had my Zoom set for split sound, and I had to make it unsplit the sound so I could hear the two channels. And it made it easier to keep track of which was which. And I surprised myself when I realized I came to the correct conclusion at the end.
Oh, very good.
Amy, one thing that occurred to me as I'm listening to this, you distinguished between more and less by making the sound louder. And I think that works well for the situation that you did it, but if you were trying to denote less of a change, you might want to consider using pitch instead of louder and softer, because I think it's easier for people to distinguish a change in pitch than it is to distinguish the degree of change between louder and softer.
Yeah, thank you. It's the interesting thing about sound is that there are multiple qualities of the sound that you can vary. Just as you say, one is the pitch or the frequency, the other is the timbre, the other is sort of the volume, and mixtures of all those. Some of our sonifications do have frequency modulated tones to indicate. And to be honest, when it's me just looking at my own data, that's what I prefer, is just a simple higher pitch, higher number mapping. But our purpose here is to also sort of engage the listener, like, ooh, what's that sound? Ooh, you know, or have them make an association, say, like the breathing sound kind of, oh, well, the ocean is sort of breathing, you know. So because it's a museum setting, you know, I guess we're trying to make the sounds a little bit more interesting. But I hear you. And I prefer just a simpler pitch changes. I have one more that I can do. And in fact, it's rather apropos for today because it's about an eclipse. It's gone by now, about an hour ago, but we had a partial solar eclipse today. This one is a little more subtle. But just you listen quite carefully because it's some of the patterns are a little more subtle than in the last couple.
There are many animals on land that are most active at night. Did you know that many animals in the ocean are also most energetic at night, using the cover of darkness to hunt and feed? Let's explore with our ears. No matter where you live, the sun rises and sets every day. This daily cycle of light and dark sets the rhythm of life on Earth, for most plants and animals, including humans. There are sensors that can measure the amount of light, also called solar radiation, throughout the day and night. Let's listen to some solar radiation data. One day of solar radiation would sound like this. During a total solar eclipse, nearly all the light from the sun is temporarily blocked by the moon as it passes between the sun and Earth, making it seem like night for a short period of time. Sensors on buoys in the North Pacific Ocean captured the famous total solar eclipse in 2017. Let's listen to solar radiation data during this eclipse. 15 hours of data is played here in 15 seconds. The data sonification starts just before sunrise on the day of the eclipse.
6 a.m. Noon. 6 p.m.
'Did you notice when during the day the eclipse occurred? It happened at the sensor location around 10 o'clock in the morning. Let's listen to that soundtrack again, but this time you'll hear the hours noted in the data sonification.
6 a.m. Noon. 6 p.m.
Most plants and animals respond in some way to the daily changes in sunlight. For example, nocturnal animals like bats, possums, and owls come out at night to hunt and eat while most humans are asleep. Many creatures in the ocean also respond to the daily cycle of light and dark. Zooplankton are tiny creatures that live in the ocean. They are as small as the width of a grain of rice. Zooplankton spend the daylight hours hiding in the dark, deep ocean, often 200 meters, or about 650 feet, below the surface. Every day, as the sun sets and the surface of the ocean becomes darker, they swim upwards and feed on microscopic plants under the cover of darkness. As the sun rises and the surface ocean becomes light again, the zooplankton quickly swim downward to get below the sunlit surface waters and back to the safety of the dark, deep ocean. 200 meters is a long distance for such tiny creatures to swim. That's farther than the height of the Washington Monument and the Space Needle in Seattle. They swim these long distances twice every day to avoid being seen by bigger animals who want to eat them. Much like a bat uses sound to find insects to eat, scientists use echo sounders to observe the changing depth of zooplankton in the ocean. Let's listen to some data from an echo sounder on the same buoy in the North Pacific Ocean and see if we can hear the daily movement of zooplankton in the ocean. In our data sonification, this is what zooplankton swimming upward sounds like. This is what zooplankton swimming downwards sounds like. Now let's listen to data collected by the echo sounder that demonstrates a day in the life of zooplankton as they move up and down in the ocean. Did you hear the zooplankton swim up to the surface, stay near the surface for a while to feed, then move back down to deeper water? Let's put it all together now and listen to zooplankton movement with the solar radiation data.
8 p.m. Midnight. 8 a.m. Noon.
Wow! The zooplankton certainly use sunlight to decide when to swim up and when to swim down. When the sun sets, they head to the surface, and when the sun rises again, they swim back down. So day after day, Night after night, zooplankton all over the world are swimming up and down in the ocean to survive, guided by the cycle of the sun. But what if the sun stopped shining on one day? What if sunlight was blocked from hitting the Earth, like in a total solar eclipse? What do you think might happen? Let's listen to the solar radiation and zooplankton data together during the 2017 total solar eclipse in the North Pacific Ocean. Here, 36 hours of data have been collapsed into 20 seconds, and we've added markers for every 4 hours of time.
5 p.m. 9 p.m. 1 a.m. 5 a.m. 9 a.m. 1 p.m. 5 p.m. 9 p.m.
The solar eclipse happened really fast in that data sonification. Max totality, the time when the moon was almost completely blocking the sun, lasted for less than 3 minutes. Let's listen to the 2017 eclipse again, but this time the eclipse event will be slowed down. Pay attention to the sound of the zooplankton during the eclipse event. Listen for how the zooplankton get tricked by the eclipse. As the moon passes in front of the sun and the sky darkens, they start to make the journey up to the ocean surface, even though it's daytime. As the moon moves away and full sunlight again hits the ocean surface, the zooplankton realize their mistake and quickly swim back down to the safety of the dark, deep ocean below.
5 p.m. 11 p.m. 5 a.m. 10 a.m. 11 a.m. 11 p.m.
These data sonifications show oceanographers that zooplankton are 100% keyed into the amount of solar radiation in the ocean, even during a total solar eclipse. And no surprise, it's a matter of life or death.
I love some of the sound effects in that one. That was, I think it said in there, the zooplankton, these are small, microscopic or nearly microscopic, almost crustaceans, like tiny, tiny shrimp, like size of a width of a rice grain.
It's amazing. It's amazing how quickly they react to that sun, you know, when they start going up. It's.
I've listened to like graphs in other apps.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, yours made more sense to me based on the explanations and demonstrations than I've ever been able to comprehend previously. And I'm sure that that has a lot to do with the fact that I'm not like the science guru like my husband, who's very smart at this stuff. I love the clarity of it all and the way you put the whole thing together.
Thank you. Well, we're trying to reach people who are not science gurus, right? People who just happen to be visiting the Museum of Science in Boston, you know, or because they have some vague interest in science, or their kids do, or they want their kids to. So, we put a pretty high premium on engaging, you know, sort of with the background music and a little bit of drama and. Because we want to catch people's attention. It's hard to get these days.
Even without all of that, though, for me, it really clarified exactly what was happening. I mean, to have those sounds done the way they did, even without the explanation, I could really get a very good picture of what was happening.
Oh, good. I did have another comment about what Jeanette said about sounds you may have heard in other apps. These ones have been pretty carefully crafted. Oh, and took us some weeks, you know, months. Although it was our first time, we could do it much faster now. But the next step, not just for us, but for this whole technology, is to be able to have it done automatically. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when there's a graph in a newspaper article or something that you're reading online, that you'd be able to click on it and hear the graph. And so that is likely to be a less high quality, at least at the beginning, and more simple, certainly not engaging, but it'd be minimalist.
If you went back and you took the first audio set there, Could you slow that down? And instead of hearing like the waves, you know, how they cycles, can that be slowed down to actually hear just the single waves by themselves?
You mean like just the surface waves on the ocean, the ones that hit the beach and go crash? Those?
Yes, exactly.
Well, it depends on the data. You know, those have a much shorter period. You know, the tidal cycle is 24 hours. You have two highs, two lows, you know, so that's how it sort of changes. You have to sample much faster to get the surface waves. Each surface wave goes by the sensor in like 10 seconds.
I was just wondering if that could be done.
I think so. If you have a fast enough sampling rate for your sensor, yeah, you should be able to detect surface waves. Definitely.
My mind did not drift away 1 second from everything you were showing and everything I was hearing. I feel like I learned a tremendous amount. When people are looking at a graph or a model or something that's supposed to represent what's the findings of a study, you know, there's so much you can absorb very quickly from looking at it. And I think that hearing the data, it seems like it, to me anyway, accomplished what you were trying to do. It really was something you could process quickly and very quickly understand and appreciate what was going on. And that's what it seems like you would want to do. I'd love to help you out with this stuff.
There's actually a public website that you can do. I don't find it very intuitive. It's called High Charts Sonification Studio. High Charts, HIGHCHARTS, High Charts Sonification Studio. If you Google it, you can find it. I've used it. It's a little complicated. It's to get to for a beginner level person. But you know, you can certainly check it out. In tools that are being built for researchers such as myself, they build in other tools as part of it. Like, for example, this gets to your earlier question, Margaret, where you can stop the sonification and use some shortcut keys to read the data values in that vicinity. So you can go back a few data points and it'll read out loud the Y values, for example. And then you can go a little bit forward, read that Y value. It also will output like what's the minimum value, the maximum value. You know, it'll read those out loud with a voice. And so it gives you more quantitative information about the y-axis in particular.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, there's another one that, again, is a little tough, I found. It's been out for a while, maybe 10 years now. It's SAS Graphics Accelerator that goes with Google Chrome is another one that anyone can download and install as a accelerator in your Chrome. And mess around with it. It just is a little bit of a steep learning curve. It's not super duper intuitive. But has anyone noticed? I don't know if anyone else uses WeatherGods. WeatherGods app on the iPhone is incorporating audiographs. There is an iPhone audiographing tool that is available to developers now. And I've noticed that Scott is using, he's the developer for WeatherGods, and he's using it every now and then. You can hear, you know, the precipitation prediction every minute for the next hour or something like that. So it's kind of a built-in thing.
Apple Weather also lets you play the audiograph. It doesn't tell you much about the x-axis, but the y-axis is just a simple increase and decrease in frequency. Mm-hmm.
Well, you see this integrated in more things. Even the Fidelity investments, they have that capability for sonifying the data for your portfolio.
Thank you very much for your comments. I'm going to pass them on to my colleagues as well. And thanks for your attention, too.
Amy, thank you for an excellent presentation.
Thank you.
Very well
My
done.
Pleasure.
Yeah, I agree. Very excellent.
Great.